Wouldn't it be great if three idiots picked apart each episode of your favorite podcast?
We do that. Wouldn't it be great if we discussed the newest episode, ongoing theories, and predictions for what comes next?
We do that. Wouldn't it be great if they didn't ruin the podcast at all and kept everything spoiler-free?
We don't do that. You've been warned.
Welcome to We Do That, a Taz Fancast. I'm your co-host, Chris.
And I'm your co-host, mostly right, Jake.
Wow, that is bold. And I'm your other co-host, Colin.
This week's episode, Amnesty, episode 11.
Okay, guys, synopsis for you based on what I recall from the episode.
Off to a good start.
They have, our heroes, along with Pigeon and Barclay, have a wet and wild night in the water park. Meanwhile, they all have flashbacks to their backstory?
Origin stories,
sure. That's pretty much it. They beat the monster? Is that spoiler-ish?
I mean, if they're listening to this, they have to be okay with spoilers.
It's in our opening tag that we're going to spoil it.
That's fair. Okay, they do beat the monster.
And Mama's back, motherfucker!
Well, I cast Zone of Truth, because this is the order that the show goes in.
It's an important plot synopsis.
Before Mama gets back, more important.
She got a brand new bag.
Harris Bonkers
is still alive.
Is he?
Yeah, Danny was taking care of him.
Oh, that's right.
Or something.
Yeah.
Fattening him up for the stew.
Right.
So I chose to interpret that.
Yeah, makes sense.
Okay.
Now I cast Zone of Truth.
Do you want to take your victory lap?
I mean, I was mostly right.
I mean, this was like the fourth week in a row you predicted that.
And?
I mean, if you're just going to predict the same thing until it comes true, it doesn't really count, I think.
Counts for me.
I mean, it doesn't do great things for his average.
Yeah, right, true. Fair.
So, you know.
How are y'all's averages looking?
I'm going to have to require you to make the same prediction this week.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, through this entire hunt, you do have to make that prediction.
Yep.
Okay.
Especially because she didn't drop any truth bombs.
It's true.
That's why I said mostly right.
I think I predicted that Pigeon would get hurt. I may have said killed in the fight. And then somehow Stern would find out about it and they'd have a run-in with Stern.
Right.
Ned had his own run-in with Stern, but Pigeon did not get hurt that we know of. May have happened off screen, not 100% certain, but
she kind of floated in and out of this this episode.
Yeah, I feel like she may have stubbed her toe in there.
Probably. It was dark.
Yeah, it was dark, and there were all those pipes sticking out of the ground.
Sticking so many pipes.
You probably don't have steel-toed boots on.
Yeah.
No, I imagine she's rocking some flip-flops.
That's exactly what I was thinking. You know she stubbed a toe, maybe chipped a nail.
Or Birkenstock. She might be a Birkenstock person.
I could see that.
Yeah.
I could see that. Still, that's a major toe stubbage.
I didn't think it would be over yet. I thought they had two more episodes in them, sure.
I think you also mentioned that they were going to do something with Stern.
Yeah, I saw that coming to a head in a different way. It's not really playing. I don't know. Griffin's got all these plot lines dangling out there, and he doesn't appear to care when they show up in a timely manner. Like, they're just going to come in at the end and be weird. I don't know. I guess that's fine. But
I mean, I think that's a place where this is still the first hunt, right?
Second hunt.
Yeah, I don't really count that first one. Like, I mean, like,
it did happen,
but like that was still the dry run. We're figuring this out part of the game. Like, all of the lines weren't meant to come together at that point.
So, that hunt is the here there be gerblins of this.
Exactly, right? Like, everything else is now sort of can pick up and run. And I think that all of those threads will come together now that we have a foundation, and especially have seen our characters, like, really experience this kind of stuff.
I think they'll definitely come together, but I don't know if it'll be natural or it'll just be Griffin forcing them to all come together.
Yeah, I think my worry is that that these side plot lines are continue to be disconnected from the Hunt plot line, and I worry that they're going to be like, and part of what I think has been set up a little bit is that there's this greater conflict going on, and it would seem that the bomb are a symptom of this. Mm-hmm. So that if they are going to be the side quest of trying to figure out this larger issue, is Griffin going to be able to tie in like Agent Stern into that, or is it more like he is an additional impediment towards the larger side, the larger thing they're trying to fix?
Yeah.
And I think he could, I think it'd be certainly feasible to tie it all together. I just worry that if he keeps popping up at the very end and it's just like an annoyance for Ned, or, or if it becomes like a really, I see it either being an annoyance or an unnecessary detour if it isn't very carefully woven into the overarching arc.
I was going to say, it kind of reminds me of like in a lot of those periodical type shows where every episode is a fully contained story, like House or something. And then at the end of the episode, you get 5 minutes
of towards, taste.
Towards whatever the season long arc is.
Yeah.
That they kind of like, that's the way it feels to me, because he's not ingrained in the story. It's just he'll pop up occasionally and they blow past him.
Yeah. Yeah. You're totally right. It feels like where all those sci-fi shows that I watched a lot of in high school, like Warehouse 13 or Eureka, all of those where they're all serialized. It's all a standalone episode, but there's always the sort of larger sinister plot.
Yeah.
I think my concern is that if Griffin is possibly building two larger sinister plots, one where the government comes, but I might save that for my zone of postulation later.
That's fair.
I got thoughts.
So before we get too far down the rabbit hole, let's go back to the beginning. The
rabbit hole.
Of
very good place to start.
The episode with the monster fight in the water park.
How many darts does Ned have? Is the Narf Blaster infinite darts?
It is magic. And they are, he did say they are possibly non-corporeal darts, like energy darts.
Okay.
Now that it's magic.
Did he say that?
It's been described like with the pulsing blue light and all that. That's fair. Like I sort of imagine that maybe it is no longer using a tangible dart.
I could see that.
But I'd also say, while the original Nerf Blaster, I don't think, had many shots, the off-brand one might have had a larger clip, and I'd give him a dozen.
Yeah, I mean, how many did he expend? I wasn't counting.
If we assume he reloaded after the incident on the river.
Right. I make that assumption.
I believe he had two, like, single shots on it in the wave pool.
Yeah.
And then he said he raked the side of it, so I'll give him another six for that one. That's eight.
And then one at the end.
And then one at the end, so nine.
Yeah, I think that's feasible. I don't remember him having two shots in the wave pool, but that sounds feasible.
Maybe it was just one.
I only remember the one, but I kind of zoned in and out during this thing. So.
No, it was just one, because it was one when he gets on top of the lifeguard tower, and then he finds himself being chased by the
river.
River.
Yeah, by the lazy river. One thing I got from the fight, or didn't like from the fight, let's go critical real quick. Is I don't feel like these characters ever, like, in this fight, they never got to do anything together.
Yeah.
It wasn't, here's a monster, you three are standing there, what do you do? It was Griffin going around one by one, what do you do? It kind of reminded me of, like, the Stolen Sentry, where everybody's operating independently with Griffin.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just not, I don't find it that entertaining.
Yeah, and that was one of the things that I sort of, I guess, have appreciated about earlier episodes in this arc, was that it's a little more up to the characters or up to the players, rather. You know, Travis can jump in and say, well, I do something. Oh, Ned did this, so now Aubrey's going to do this, rather than this sort of turn-based.
Yeah.
And we had bits of that, like when Aubrey stopped the wall of water from Ned, but I do think it was a bit more turn-based than normal. I also... I almost put some of that, though, on the player characters, because I don't think they fully understand what Griffin's doing with how they're supposed to handle the monster. Like, I think the three of them seem to have agreed that Ned's blaster is the only thing that can hurt it, when we know the other two did damage to it. Like, they heard it all happen. Yeah. So I don't know why they settled on that again at sort of the very end. I mean, I think it made sense for the plot line, but they sort of became a focus of, like, Ned's the one who has to do damage, so we have to go run around and do sort of, like, well, other stuff.
That's sort of how Griffin set it up, isn't it? Like, you guys tried to fight this thing. Nothing worked.
Yeah.
Granted, they tried by, I mean, Aubrey's plan was to make it chilly.
Right.
Didn't seem like it was ever going to do a lot of damage.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends on how spicy the chili is.
Okay. I did appreciate that. but then he had them make a special trip to Sylvain to get the magic weapon that, I mean, in every video game and every Zelda game and every, you know, you do that and then that's the weapon you use to beat the monster.
Right. But, like, Duck chose a jetpack.
True, true.
So, and did not at any point think, like, maybe I should bring that with me for the fight. Like, maybe Griffin has a plan to tie it in. Because I'm sure Griffin has a plan that if Duck had said, I bring my jetpack, he has, like, a branch where that will go down and he can accommodate that. And that will do some harm.
I totally agree. What I will note is that when they were in Sylvain, the cat...
Garfield. Heathcliff.
Heathcliff.
Cheshire.
I have to say all of them.
Name all cats.
Right, all cat names.
He basically said, I understand that you're looking for a weapon. Ned, I believe you have a gun on you. And Ned says, I do, but here's my Narf blaster instead. Let's enchant the shit out of that. So, I mean, it made it pretty clear that the weapon was... Ned's gun.
Yeah.
And to be fair, Aubrey's armor jacket thing did come into play. It protected her at one point. And Duck did make clear that he was never going to use that jetpack.
He did.
He was terrified of it.
Right, yes.
Which,
but
maybe you shouldn't have asked for it.
Yeah.
He gave you plenty of opportunities not to.
Yeah.
But I could see it. I could see it being like the thing where he sort of sets it off and like a missile, it flies and sticks into the water monster and blows like the little yellow ball away from the pool of water. And
yeah, I could see that.
But I think more to that point that if Griffin's going to set up that Ned's blaster is the only thing that can do it, don't let the other two do harm to it.
Mm-hmm. Now, how much, correct me if I'm wrong, but each player character has 7 health.
Yes.
How much do these abominations have? I thought the rule was that everything in this world had 7 health. But they definitely did more than 7 damage to it, 7 harm to it. I mean, they did 7 harm on their first go-around. Aubrey did 2, Duck did 2, Ned did 3. I mean, I think total they end up doing at least 9. I don't know if he counted the last harm when it, like, the kill shot.
Well, and so maybe that's the mechanic, is you have to do at least 7 harm before it's killable.
But I think if we're talking about it, if it hits 7 after the end of that first round, there is a lot more monster actions after that that were not, like, it ready for a kill blow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they go through that whole round, and then it goes and, like, takes over the water slides.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know what the rules are, obviously. How would I?
I mean,
I'm not going to look them up.
They're in the Google Drive folder, if you want to look at them. I went and got them for us.
That is a good thought.
I also didn't read them, so, you know, no shade. I'm just saying they are
good, there. Good, because I'm not going to. it just seemed like I was counting, like, oh, man, they're going to kill this thing quickly. And then it moved over to the lazy river.
Yeah.
Which I guess Pigeon shut it off from the city's water, but not from the other rides in the park water.
Yes. So that was, I think, not my understanding of how the plan was going to be executed. I thought they're going to trap it in one of the water things.
In the wave pool.
Yeah. And then, obviously, they just trapped it in the water park.
Yeah, I don't think Griffin was going to let them keep it. Because I thought the wave pool was a great idea.
Yeah,
and it worked.
Yeah, very cool.
It worked out really well.
I didn't fully understand that, and I'd have to go back and maybe listen to their sort of like, at this point, probably pretty shitty planning episode where they ran through what they were going to do to see if they actually talked about it. Because I thought the idea was like, Griffin described all of those aspects of the park thinking, in my head, I was thinking they would have to pick one. Like,
yeah,
we're going to do the battle at the Lazy River, at the water slide or something. And the fact that it could move between all of them and then sort of like a sort of around generally once it became Water Snake and just moved over, I presume over land, really.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess what I thought was it went down into the ground and where the pipes connected to the other rides and basically could move through the system down there. Oh, but as a water snake, yes.
Over yeah, when it goes and takes over the slides.
Yeah, yeah, right, right. Now that I've processed what you said.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Agreed.
That's how it got to the Lazy River, for sure.
Yeah, right, but, right, right.
Which I think still worked well. I sort of wonder how that would have played out, because Griffin was pushing towards, like, invent a part of the river that's dammed or something, right?
Yeah.
Which seems like it would have been a lot less fun than the water park.
I think the water park worked out really well.
Yeah.
You've got a number of water features that you can play around with.
I did have, I have one additional criticism to Levy.
Levy?
Oh, I'm gonna ask you. I thought when we first got into like the water park setup, they're like entering the thing, and I heard the beginnings of a music bit that Griffin had written. I thought we were heading for like a very classic video game heavy guitar boss battle thing, and I got super excited. And then it was a sort of reprise of the Monsters theme from earlier in this arc, which is good. Like, it's good and well-composed, and I think hits the notes that Griffin hits of sort of a more electronic, ambient, environmental sort of soundtrack thing. But I was really kind of stoked for, like, really heavy guitar riffs, like, coming in and just really amping this whole thing up.
Yeah, that would have been tight.
And I like, heard it start. I was like, oh, this is going to be so good. And then it got into the sort of the keyboard synth bit. And I was like, oh, no. Oh, my emotions.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wanted it so bad.
Not quite as much adrenaline pumping.
Yeah. Which I think maybe in fairness, like, it's harder to jump out of that to a flashback.
Now, what did you guys think of the flashbacks? Since you brought up the word before
I did. I guess they're good. I guess they're good. I think obviously there are bits of information that I want to know. And I think they're important to story development. I sort of wonder about how Griffin is creating the impetus for them. I get Aubrey's, like, if she's tapping into more of her magical power, maybe that would awaken another part of her brain and would take her out of it for a moment. But like Ned and Dux seemed a little less triggered, I suppose.
Well, what do you think, Jake?
Well, thank you, Colin. I liked them because I really wanted to hear that information. And I think doing it in sort of this pitched, adrenaline-fueled moment made a lot more sense than having them sit around at a coffee table during the hunting hiatus or Lodger interlude. And sharing it. Like, it felt like, sure, there are other ways that it could have happened, but it felt pretty natural to me.
So my question, and I don't know the answer to it, is did the players have any say in what happened in these backstories? Or is this Griffin dictating what their origin is? It's like, was it Ned's decision that Ned Chicane is not his real name? Or was that something Griffin just decided?
Or how about Dr. Harris Bonkers coming from a pet store not being rescued from an animal treatment lab?
Yeah.
I think, so it seemed like they might have had some say in it based on the way it was edited. It seemed like there were conversations not happening during their recording, but like, I think Travis at some point said something in past tense about that I'd have to go back and listen for the evasion.
Yeah.
But during his flashback, that made me think of, like, he has thought about having to deal with this sequence previously.
But yeah, that's the impression that I had too. Like, I think that especially given that Griffin has said, hey, I want you guys to be more involved. Like, I want you to help me create this world.
Yeah. Well, I'm comparing it to, like, the Balance arc, where they crafted their own backstories from the beginning. And maybe that's what happened, but, I mean, when he said, like, oh, you're going to bed, and then, you know, a Continental pulls up outside and park. It's like, it's drawing these connections and building a backstory to this world.
Is that the car that Ned and his partner were driving?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought so. I just couldn't remember.
Yeah, so he's starting to link all this stuff, and...
But they talked about that link happening, in the world building episode.
Yeah. Like, we knew it was going to happen. It just.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but it happened to happen on the night. Like, he happened to rob their house on the night before Aubrey was going to set out to be a traveling magician. Like, that felt a little on the nose to me.
Except fate is a part of this, right? Like, yeah, if Duck is fated,
what kind of,
that means that these situations...
What kind of shitty B&E artist is he if he's going to break and enter into a house? He said he's not a violent person. He's going to do it while people are home and awake? What kind of shitty criminal is he?
They're all asleep.
No, they're not.
Yes,
are they?
He pulled up.
When they're asleep. He says at the very end, everyone's gone to sleep, the lights are all out, and in the dark you see the
So most break-ins happen during the day, when everybody's gone, they're at work. It's like, robberies don't typically happen
at
night.
Hey,
Colin, do you know how to get into my apartment?
Jake.
Here's what I'm going to guess.
Jake, of course.
I'm going to guess that Griffin's experience with breaking and enterings, I don't know this, but I'm thinking Home Alone might be his source material.
Or that time he got robbed at GameStop.
Yeah, or that time he got robbed at GameStop. So, accepting the point at GameStop, Home Alone, they broke in at night.
Just saying, that it feels too on the nose. Like, if it had happened the day after she left, it wouldn't have felt.
But she'd have the pendant.
So if it had happened a week before, or, well, I mean, it could have happened at any time. But it feels so, and it feels like one of those things where Griffin's desire to make it a nice story that everything connects and wraps up well sort of overrides, like, the rules of logic and the things you would expect. And that's what bothers me.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I understand it. I think I'm willing to chalk it up to good storytelling that, because I think it is important to have the moment where Aubrey gets the pendant. And I think that as the way they described it, the way sort of the family interaction happened, I think that makes sense as the way she comes to have possession of it. And then it needs to end up in the Cryptonomicon. So somehow Ned has to get it.
Sure.
And then by that nature, they have to have it on the same night.
I mean, I don't think they do.
Otherwise, it's him robbing Aubrey later.
Sure.
But then they don't know each other.
Sure. Like, you can have him rob her later if he's already breaking in and entering at night, like a shitty criminal. He can do that at any time. I mean, I guess I see what you're saying about wanting the good story, but to me, it's not good storytelling because it removes my ability to be invested in the world because it just stands out to me as this is too coincidental. This is too obvious storytelling. It's when it becomes so obvious that the story is being told, I lose, I forget what the phrase is. Where
suspension of disbelief.
Yeah, I can no longer suspend my disbelief. I'm just like, okay, well, this is all very contrived. Whereas if it sort of happens more by happenstance,
let me fix this whole thing for you.
It's all
everyone is dark. Everyone's gone to bed. A car happens to pull up. Done.
But it's still, criminals don't normally break and enter at night. I mean, maybe he's just a shitty criminal. It is Clint we're talking about, but, like it's the thing, like, okay, Aubrey's mother hasn't taken off the pendant in 20 years.
Yeah.
But it's not as special to Aubrey as it was to her, so Aubrey's a little more careless with it, leaves it somewhere she shouldn't, something like that.
Nick pickpocket, you know, Ned pickpockets her on a train or something.
Yeah, Ned happens upon it or something like that and takes it. She's not constantly wearing it around her neck or something like that. Like, there's so many ways for this to have been resolved that, at least to me, didn't feel so contrived. Like, maybe she forgot it at home when she left because it just wasn't as important to her.
Yeah.
But for it to happen, oh, this is very important to me. I want you to have it. Oh, thank you. I'm about to set out to become a traveling magician. And that's the night with three people at home that they choose to break in.
Has Aubrey seen it in the Cryptonomicon?
No, I think it's it was like
narration bit.
Yeah, it was like in the back room, and it was just one of those. And in some box in the corner, you see a glint of red.
Which,
and,
by the way, another offshoot that annoys the hell out of me. Another whatever sidetrack thing. Griffin explaining everything as "and we see." I hate that. I just tell us what happens. Build the world. Don't build the. It's like he's building the shot for a movie.
Yeah.
And don't do that. Just build the world. Don't say, we see the water encapsulate the tower of slides and become this. Just say the water encapsulates the tower and becomes a big towering water monster. Like, you don't need to say, we see. And he started getting into this in the late phases of Balance, and it annoys the hell out of me. I can't stand it. Things just happen. It's not, we see this, we see that. It ruins it for me. It bothers me. I can tell you guys are similarly affected by all my...
I have definitely taken note of it. I don't know that it takes me out of...
Yeah, it doesn't bother me.
For me, it's always instead just triggered of Griffin's about to paint a word picture. I wonder how everybody else thinks about it.
Yeah, I mean, it makes it all seem so much more scripted.
Yeah.
Because it's not this world that exists... It's this thing that Griffin is picturing, which makes me think I should try and picture it the way Griffin pictures it instead of just building it the way I would see it happening in my mind. If that makes sense.
No, yeah. I mean, I get you.
Yeah.
It's never really been something that bothered me because I'm trusting him to take me on this story. Like, as the creator, I'm trusting him to paint those pictures for me. And I mean, I still think there's plenty of room for me to use my imagination to fill in the gaps and to picture exactly how this thing is happening and looking. So it doesn't really bother me. And you know, I always think about, well, you know, I see these things like I'm behind a camera. Like, I'm framing this. Like, that's how it makes sense to me.
Yeah, but, and I don't disagree. But if you were to say, like, how you would frame it might be different from how he frames it. But I feel like by putting those two words, we see, in front of it, you or I am forced as a listener to try and frame it the way he would frame it. Which isn't, that's just the way I interpret it. But that's not necessarily the way I would have framed it, if that makes sense. I don't know if I'm doing a great job of explaining it, but it totally makes it, it totally takes me out of the immersion.
Especially, so as I think about that phrasing specifically, if nothing else, it should be you see as he talks to his players.
Yeah. And
Griffin doesn't see anything.
And I would be fine with that. And that's why I think he's removing himself from the game and he's removing the players from the game, and he's removing all of us from the game. And he's making it clear that, I mean, if anything, it feels like he's drawing attention to the fourth wall that says, you know, this is, it's happening on a screen. It's not happening in the world. It's happening on a screen, and you are not part of it. You're just watching it. Whereas when it's more immersive and more, the water collides with the water slide structure, and it climbs up it and spills over, and it all becomes one giant water mountain. That's a different thing than saying we see the monster do this. It totally breaks it for me because it adds that fourth wall in there that otherwise I wouldn't put in.
Yeah. Well, I have no doubt you've just ruined it for me because I don't know that I noticed it. I know I heard it, but I don't know if I noticed it. And now that's the only thing I'm going to hear for the next 16 episodes.
Sorry?
No, you're not.
No, I'm really not.
Welcome to my world, motherfucker.
That's right. He's going to drag you down.
Dear listeners, I apologize for Colin.
We all hate Taz down here.
That's the thing is, I mean, I don't hate it. I love Taz. But I just think about what it used to like in the early, and it's because I've been re-listening to Balance, and you can see where he transitions from like a collaborative storytelling where you're in the world and this shit is happening to one that's more scripted and he's got a story he wants. And in one of the episodes, the guys are trying to make a joke, and he's like, guys, I've been setting this up for a long time, so please just shut up and let me talk.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that's not what this is. That's not why I fell in love with it.
Yeah.
It's because of those stupid jokes and all that. It's the same discussion we've had before, but it just, yeah. So welcome, Chris, to the depths of my Taz criticalism.
Should we change our podcast to You Do That? or We See You Do That?
That
while we're talking about small, well, no, we're not. But I want to talk about a small thing that I really liked because I just looked at my notes again when Aubrey gets into the wave pool for the first time, and Travis says, "So now Aubrey thinks, what does bait think like? Think like bait."
That was very good,
so good. And I think I had a lot of initial concerns. I think many of us had some initial concerns about Aubrey and the way Travis was playing Aubrey. And I think he's really found her voice in a really nice way.
Agreed.
Yeah, I think so.
He's settled in, and I think it's sort of the space of having not have to rush through an arc, but I think he's settled into the like excited and somewhat immature, but oddly competent Aubrey who can sort of run around and just is like, I'm going to jump over that fence. And then when it works, like, it's going to work. But when it works, it's like, holy shit, it worked.
Yeah.
And then, like, still seeking external validation from Duck and Ned. Well, very, very cool.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think she's not nearly as insufferable as she was in that first mini arc. Maybe it's just because the rabbit has...
I don't mind losing the rabbit.
Yeah. The rabbit disappearing or staying at the lodge for long periods of time.
Yeah.
Is preferable.
I do have to take us to Rabbit Watch for a minute because I have some questions based on our flashback.
Let's do it.
So I assume that when we meet Aubrey and Dr. Harris Bonkers, they've been to some shit together, and I had assumed that maybe those experiences are what had earned him his PhD.
Right.
But now we learn that from a bunny, he already had his PhD.
Right.
How does a bunny get a PhD?
Hard work.
So I don't want to say no, because PhDs take hard work. But they also take time. Like, you can't be a bunny and have a... You can't.
Yeah,
you can't.
Won't. I think can't. I mean, I totally, whatever I thought the backstory of Dr. Harris Bonkers might have been, it seems to detract a lot from it because now it seems like Aubrey just gave him that name to be funny or cute or something.
Yeah, or obstinate.
Yeah, and it just seems like, okay, this is stupid.
Yeah.
He's clearly not a PhD.
Right.
Like he was before?
I mean, he might have been coming over from Selvin. Maybe he used to be bunny man.
Yeah, knowing nothing before left the opportunity for either Travis or Griffin to do something very clever where that bunny actually has a PhD.
Yeah, or it was rescued from a research lab where it did a lot of research and thus earned its PhD. Or,
you know, like... when she found it it was resting on a bed that was made of a shredded diploma that was for Harris Bonkers. And, like, so she adopted the name for it or something. Like,
yeah.
I think there could have been more depth there than the, clearly it's just, like, that's just what she picked when they went to a pet store and got
it. Or the bunny was resting on a dead Dr. Harris Bonkers.
Right, from the morgue.
Yeah, yeah.
And it had stolen his name tag and it had it
in its mouth. It was chewing on it.
Like, chewing on it, yeah, yeah. Or business cards, possibly.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, bunnies like cold objects, so it makes sense that he'd be down in the morgue.
Do they?
Mm-hmm. They're like the opposite of cats. Cats like warm stuff. Bunnies like cold stuff.
That's science, ladies and gentlemen.
Do. Gonna Google. Don't trust a thing that Collins.
That's why you see so many more rabbits in the winter time, because that's when they come out from their hibernation. They hibernate all summer, come out in the winter when it's and chilly.
I'm glad I can stop Googling now.
Because now you know it's right.
No.
I mean, look, you feel how hot it is. Don't you want to hibernate where it's nice and cool?
Yeah.
That's what they do. I guarantee you, you go down to any morgue right now, they have an infestation of bunnies.
Rabbits do not tolerate extreme weather temperatures.
Well, not extreme, just
like the cool chilly side of the pillow.
Yeah. Just like a dead body that's been in a morgue fridge.
So read that story about the woman in Australia who was put in the morgue and she wasn't dead.
That shit happens more than people realize.
It's my nightmare.
So they used to have bells in coffins. Well, not in coffins, but strings in coffins linking up to bells. So when people wake up, they tug on it and alert people that they're awake. I mean, it's, if nothing else, it's an urban legend.
Okay, I'll grant you that.
But there have definitely been
a website called "Can I Give My Rabbit an Ice Cube?"
.net? .info?
No, this is rabbits.life.
It's .tv.
.rabbits.life. /coveted .life.
Ice desk cube. Did you know that heat can be deadly to rabbits?
See?
Heat is deadly to most living things.
Yeah.
Applied in incorrect quantities for incorrect time periods.
That's why summer sucks and winter's waiting. Welcome to New York.
So this is a direct quote from the website
Newsies?
Rabbits.life. Yeah. Rabbits certainly love cool things.
Yeah. Woo! Validation.
They snuggle up to them and lick them.
Well, we know how she found Harris Bonkers. He was licking the dead body of Dr. Harris Bonkers in the morgue.
At the pet store.
It was a very grotesque pet store.
Yeah. Alternative.
Look, I'm going to say, and I think I prefer this backstory for Dr. Harris Bonkers.
Yeah, I mean, it's better than what they told us, so
yeah.
I'm into it. I guess I'll accept it.
So, I mean, that's a good lead in though. So what about the rest of the flashbacks? The content.
Good.
It was fine.
Yeah.
It was silly.
No, Dux was good. I enjoyed Dux. I enjoyed Justin's role playing as younger Justin, which is very funny.
I don't know. I always enjoy Justin's role playing. He's the best player character of this group.
Yes.
By far.
I want to understand what Griffin wanted us to take away from the vision of the fire and the sun and the everything. There's so much to unpack there. And I feel like we need like one more clue to really take us someplace.
Well, and then so we wait till we get a clue.
Dude, no, I want to know right now.
That's fair.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I'm with you.
I think it was. I think it was good. It was interesting. Dux just answered, raised more questions than it answered.
Which isn't that good for the beginning of a story?
I just worry that we're not at the... I don't know how long this story is. is, I guess, what my concern is, maybe, is what I'm driving at. And depending on how many of, like, how quickly do these loose ends need to get wrapped up? I know where we should probably expect to head towards, like, balanced version, so we have 50 more episodes coming, at least.
I think you said half as long.
Right. So,
balanced length.
If we're, yeah, like, if we are supposed to be a third of the way through, there's a lot that would need to get fleshed out in possibly 4 more hunts.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've said this many times before, so this won't come as a surprise to anybody listening. I don't like that Griffin already has the larger story planned out. Like, you can tell he does by the way he's narrating things and the way he's having these flashbacks and laying the groundwork. But I feel like some of it, you just got to play and see what happens. And I feel like a lot of that is removed because he already knows where it's going to go.
I think it'd be hard to do their podcast they want to do. They seem to all want to do.
Right.
And let it be that
improv-y. But I want them to do the podcast I want them to do.
Right. I always forget about that. Executive producer Colin swooping in, taking his Max Fun donation back.
That's right. Well, too lazy to cancel that, but
lost that login like a year ago.
Yeah, I didn't even download the bonus content. Rookie mistake. So that's my main concern with it. I think the content of the flashback is, none of them blew my socks off. They kind of took me away from the fight that they were having. I understand, it draws people in, but I feel like the focus should be on the fight, and the fact that the fight wasn't enough to draw like the attention of the entire attention of like the DM or the GM or the keeper or whatever they're called. Just seems, I don't know. It seems like this is supposed to be the big boss battle.
Yeah, I do. So I appreciate what we sort of talked about as like the that moment of adrenaline being the impetus for them having the flashback. But it did seem to me that these flashbacks would more possibly happen in a moment of introspection or reflection, either preparing for or coming down from the fight. Like in the rush of adrenaline afterwards, you see something and that triggers it or whatever. I do think it was a strange pacing choice for the fight.
Yeah, they're having this cool fight. I'm already frustrated that they don't have a lot of player interaction compared to like balance fights. And then it's just further cut up by these scenes that are very specifically just one player and Griffin, just further removing interpersonal interaction between our three players. Very critical this week. I think it's because I've been listening to Stolen Century.
Oh, so you're already in a mood. I also think we're getting into, we're out of the honeymoon period where they were feeling relaxed and sort of just playing the game, and we're into season two proper. We're in the meat of it now. And so lots of chess pieces are being moved around to sort of set up other moments.
Yeah.
Yep. Which is necessary in the story they're trying to tell.
Yeah, but it's only Griffin moving the chess pieces that I can tell. Is a really game of chess and I know it's not supposed to be us playing him or anything, but it feels like, at least to me, it felt like the characters didn't have a huge role. Like, they've got to defeat the monster and everything and respond. It almost feels like a Telltale game. You've got to respond to the prompts, but the story's going to happen anyway.
Yeah, there isn't that much agency for them.
Yeah.
Do you think Griffin would really be willing to let one of these three characters die in a monster hunt?
Yes, if he had planned for it to happen that way.
So no. So if it was if it was an emergent thing where they just rolled really badly and
No, I don't think.
Yeah, like if in this fight the duck is drowning, Aubrey does not decide to help. Aubrey's like, no, Ned, we have to get rid of this monster. Duck can fend for himself. And then Duck drowns.
I don't think he'd let that happen.
Because that would be the, you know, based on where this, where that was going, if Aubrey didn't go in that moment, I think Duck is logically dead.
Yeah.
But you don't think Griffin would let it happen?
Nah, Pigeon would come out and save him, or Barclay, wherever he went to.
He did disappear, didn't he?
Yeah, he went into the little shack that controls
the... Turn the wave pool on, and then nailed it, guys.
Ducked behind the desk.
Maximum wave.
Pigeon turned a thing, and then she... Gonzo. I mean, I think he would have had one of like the NPCs save him. I think he would have somebody die, but only if it had been planned. Not on accident. I think.
Jake.
I'm mulling.
Cider, wine.
Oh, definitely wine.
Nice.
Old spiced wine.
So good, so warm. Be refreshing after a day fighting monsters at the water park.
Prefer cider myself. Yeah. Well, thankfully, they turned the hot spring back on, so.
The pump. The
hot
spring pump.
Yep. No comment on that for the moment. No. I think we've hit that enough.
Because
I feel like he would. For an accident. Like, I think he respects the game too much. If you're going to play with higher stakes like this, again, if you have 7 hit points, that's all you got. You know, I think if that's the case, I think he'd respect that.
I think Griffin would tweak everything just enough to save the character.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing in everything we've experienced in Balance and Amnesty and Dust and Commitment to make me think that they respect the game too much to change the rules on the fly. I don't know what that was. So, I would hope he would let them die. I was actually really hoping somebody would die.
We know.
That sounds morbid. Well, but I want them to prove that they would do it.
Yeah.
But I don't know that they will. Okay, let's move past the fight into whatever happened next. They're back at the lodge, I believe.
Yeah, they turn the springs on. Everybody's pretty jazzed about that. Great, great, great.
Yeah.
Still, well, yeah, questions about how springs work.
He could be doing that every week.
So Ned gets back to the Cryptonomica and finds Agent Stern and, oh my God, what's his face?
Kirby.
Hanging out.
Kicking it,
watching the video, and... We find Ned to be decidedly like antagonizing Agent Stern, maybe inappropriately. Like, Agent Stern seems pretty chill. I don't trust him, but he seems pretty chill. I can't figure out.
Yeah, that seemed like a large overreaction on Ned's part. Like, you have been such a nuisance to me. We've talked like twice.
Yeah.
36 hours.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe 48.
And it seems like, I don't know, based on the way Griffin is playing Agent Stern, that we're heading towards maybe like a rogue agent or someone who's going to be on their side at one point, like someone who's not out for the downfall of the lodge necessarily.
Yeah, I don't know. I think he represents a threat because we don't know which side he would be on.
Yeah.
We don't know if he would be on like the side of the Pine Guard or the side of the government, and we don't know that those are mutually exclusive,
right?
But it did seem like a strange tack to take, and then to immediately spin on a dime and pretend that he was joking the entire time.
Yeah,
very awkward.
And I wonder, I don't know, though, that that was out of character for Ned.
No, I think the moment that Agent Stern showed that he had cards that could be of value to Ned.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it made total sense that he would try to get access to whatever he could. But it felt uncharacteristic for him to shut down a potential opportunity as quickly as he did at the beginning.
Especially as like if Ned the Grifter, like surely I think he'd be looking for a way to get himself in a better place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Rather than just sort of trying to close doors.
Right. Well, especially given his past, wouldn't he rather want to be an asset rather than a target?
Yeah. Turn state's witness or whatever
the yeah, exactly.
occult version of that is.
Like, hey, world buddy, I helped you, you know, arrest Barclay.
Right.
I think you can wipe this.
What if I did exist a little bit earlier?
Yeah, exactly. Play that card.
And then we have Duck's sort of brief wrap-up wherein he gets groceries.
Well, I feel like the play there, the line, the whatever, the point was that whatever, what's his face?
Wow. Good listening.
Turkmenistan? Tarkesian? Tarkesian. Obviously knows about like how to fight.
Yeah.
And so he's probably, I mean, I don't know. This is probably something for like the zone of postulation, but.
Zone of postulation.
Yeah, that feels good. I like that.
He just like ruined my template though, because it's set so that I can copy out Colin's track, not your track. So now.
Well, but Colin will say it.
Oh, yeah. I'll say it again.
Oh, I thought we might just be heading there because we're heading towards Theory Town.
Not yet.
Theory Town. Population, us.
Before we get there, we got to talk about. So I wonder if Turkmenistan or whatever.
Tarkesian.
Is a former member of the Pine Guard.
Oh.
And we didn't talk about Mama coming back. About Jake being right.
Finally.
So I think the trick with, because I think the conversation about Mama coming back before we get to the zone of postulation is Mama came back.
I disagree. I have more to say. Naturally.
Okay.
It annoyed the hell out of me. And he's like, you see a woman come in.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And she has a long tattered duster on and. She's using a shot. It's like, we all know it's Mama.
Yeah, yeah.
Just what are you playing at here? Like, it's going to be some big reveal?
Right, and also, like, that Danny or Barclay or whatever would not instantly recognize Mama.
Yeah, like, why are you describing her like this? It's clear, as soon as you said the door opens and a woman walks, everybody knew it was Mama.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And why is Danny's... She comes in and says, oh, you need to take me to the hospital. And Danny's first reaction is to yell outside. Hey, Mama's back. Mama's home.
Also,
why not take her to the hospital?
What does Mama not know if Danny can drive a pickup truck? They've known each other for a while. Like, doesn't she ask, like, can you drive a truck? Mm-hmm. That's a dumb question.
Oh, agreed. The other thing that bothered me with that scene is when he filled up the hot spring, Griffin says everybody cheered at Barclay. Which just amuses me. The guy turns a knob and water starts shooting out. Like, yeah, Barclay! Woo! Good job! Way to turn that spigot!
I mean, listen, he made the waves and he made the hot spring. And that's what Barclay's all about.
Barclay's just the guy behind the man behind the curtain, pushing buttons and turning knobs.
Call him Barclay Knobs Bigfoot.
We'll workshop it.
I think it's time that we go to the zone of postulation.
Zone of postulation.
Well, I have been told that I'm contractually obligated this week to say that I postulate that next week Mama will come back and drop a knowledge bomb on the crew.
The problem is, like, you could still be right.
Yeah, because the knowledge bomb.
She has to leave and come back. Like, she has to go to the hospital and come back.
Well, I think Aubrey's going to take her to the hospital. So she'll still be with one of the player characters.
Wait, is it Aubrey she sees first or Danny?
I mean, I don't know.
I think she recognized both of them. I think the statement was, do either of y'all know how to drive a truck?
And Aubrey said yes, which who knows if she does or not.
Well, no, but that is a great question, though, because when Mama picks up Aubrey for the first time, is there not a conversation about driving? Just that they need to run away from the cops.
Aubrey is telling her to just go. Just go, go, go.
Okay, but there's away. No mechanical conversation.
I don't know. I don't think so. Okay.
I thought I finally found a hole in the plan.
But I was going to say, there's no way that... I don't think there's any way that Griffin allows Danny to take...
Mama. Yeah, to take her out of the episode again.
Yeah. Instead, it'll be like... Aubrey's like, Danny, you go. And they say, no, I have to stay here and watch your rabbit.
Yeah, right. No, it'll be she has to spend time in the springs.
That's exactly what it'll be. Yeah.
Let's do a little more pointed zone of postulation this week. Where do you think Mama's been?
Tibet.
Okay.
The moon.
All right.
Because he did say it would be a lunar interlude, so got to get back to the moon.
Could be. I'm going to guess Eastern Europe. What do you think she was doing?
Looking for the guy who used to run the laptop.
There is an actual man in the moon or whatever.
And it's a bomb.
And it's a no, but it's like a wise sage advisor that she was consulting,
like an oracle.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna redo where I think she was. She was someplace not far away, because there's no way she would have flown in that condition. So she was closer. And I think
you just got to stick with your bad idea.
You know, I'm too flighty for that. I think she was fighting the government, like on the run from the government.
Interesting.
I don't know.
So fair. Fair.
Okay. Second postulation I'd like you to make. When Minerva appears to Duck in his vision, she talks about the joining of the two planets and then there's a giant sun destroying the world. Is that the end of the campaign that they're going to need to fight off some sort of cataclysmic event?
No.
No.
Because that would suck.
I'm going to say yes. Let's hold on to these.
I think maybe it's a cataclysmic event on Sylvain, and then we don't have to care about it.
That'd be nice.
I'm
so tired.
That would be clutch. And Sylvain is destroyed. Hmm.
All right, and then next week's episode. What's going to happen?
Well, we got Jake's.
Yeah,
You want to drop some knowledge?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot of lodge talky. I imagine we're going to have a pretty touching hospital room scene wherein Mama does divulge some information to, I'm going to guess, perhaps just Aubrey. I'm going to bet that Duck and Ned... Ned enlists Duck's help in dealing with Agent Stern, and that becomes a bit of a thing. And I'm hoping we maybe advance the plot of Ned's former partner a little bit. Just we get a taste.
Yeah, I think this will definitely be an interlude-y episode, since he said it would be an interlude episode. I don't remember how leveling up works and if they ever actually get to level up.
They do from they get the experience they get from failing.
Yeah.
Right.
So you level up when you hit 5 experience.
Right. I wonder if they're going to throw that out the window and level everybody up
at by the end one. Of this.
Yeah. Just to sort of make sure everybody's on the same page so you don't have like a, you know, Clint being level 10 because he always fails his rolls and Travis being a level 1 because he's never rolled badly in his life.
Right. Yeah.
So I think there's a good chance they'll level up. I think, they will take Mama to the hospital and then she'll wake up and Aubrey will just leave a note for her saying like, be back later. Like Mama left for her.
Yeah.
Just as a Travis way to stick it to Mama.
Right.
That's pretty much all I got. Don't have a whole lot of expectations.
I think it's going to be a light week.
I think it'll be a very, very light week. I don't see a lot happening, really. So we'll see. We'll see. So any other big, bold predictions or comments or rants?
I think I'm all ranted out.
That may have just been me.
Yeah, I think you did enough for all three of us, perhaps.
It's a good week. All right. Well, guys, thank you for listening to We Do That, a Taz fan cast. I think I have more to say, but I don't remember what it is.
We Do That comes out every Monday after the Adventure Zone.
It comes out on Thursdays after the Adventure Zone, which is super fun. And this is why we do a scripted outro.
This is going so well.
It's been 2 months that we've come out on Thursdays.
This is so bad.
All right. Well, thank you so much for listening to We Do That. Be sure to subscribe and share this podcast with your favorite podcatcher app or wherever you listen. If you want to share your thoughts and theories, hit us up on Twitter at WeDoThat_pod or on our email address at WeDoThatPod@gmail.com. And we will come out next Thursday after the Adventure Zone. Bye, everybody.